Guitarist Nels Klein is our guest for this Vintage Cafe today, originally broadcast in 2009. Nels Klein has performed on over 100 albums in the jazz, pop, rock, country, and experimental pop music genres, recording with artists as diverse as Mike Watt of the Minutemen and Willie Nelson. He even recorded a guitar album based on John Coltrane's Interstellar Overdrive. In 2007, he appeared on the Wilco album Sky Blue Sky, as well as the live album Kicking Television, and has continued as a member of the band, including recording the latest album, The Whole Love. At the time of this interview, he had just released a solo record called Coward. So he seems a great guy to talk about guitar influences with, and I started out by asking him if he had an epiphanal moment when he decided the guitar was it for him.
Absolutely. I think it was a build-up, frankly, starting with, surf music. I grew up in Southern California, and in the mid-60s, started getting interested in sound and music, along with my twin brother Alex. We were kind of getting rock and roll obsessed by the time we were about 10 or 11 years old. And so surf music, obviously very guitar-centric music, was the first kind of inkling of electric guitar excitement, which led to the Byrds and the Stones. But it was hearing Jimi Hendrix one afternoon on the AM radio. The song was Manic Depression. That was it. That was really, really it. I mean, we were both literally jumping up and down, freaking out. It just was so overwhelming sonically and so exciting on every level. And that was probably, if I had to find a particular moment or an epiphany, that was the moment.
Was there any particular things in his playing that you could point to?
Well, in this case of this song, I mean, it's so otherworldly, yet at the same time, it's so rock. The sound of him, particularly the moment when he sings along with that ascending unison bending line. It's very famous right up before the guitar solo, and then the guitar solo with the controlled feedback. And the stupendous Mitch Mitchell drumming and the drum sound and that groove, everything about it was just unbelievably electric. And we knew right away that it was that record because we looked at that album cover for weeks. And we used to save our allowance and every 2 weeks buy a new record. And we'd been burned a few times buying records that looked really cool, but that weren't all that great because this was before Underground FM. That was about 2 years later. And then we heard a lot of great music before buying the record. So we'd held off on this Hendrix record, even though it looked like one of the coolest records of all time.
Well, now, speaking of Southern California, I heard that Roger McGuinn was fit in there somehow. How did that work for you?
Well, the Byrds were my first big rock and roll band obsession, really. My brother and I used to hang out with this kind of ne'er-do-well bunch of guys when we were 10, and they were living pretty much unsupervised in an apartment. I don't know where their dad ever was. He was never around. So this guy Mitch's big brother used to sort of look after us, and we'd just sit around this apartment listening to Turn, Turn, Turn over and over again. I don't know why we decided that the Byrds were part of our sort of pseudo-gang experience, but we used to wear Byrd glasses and ride our bikes around with Byrd glasses on and listen to Turn, Turn, Turn over and over again. That said, it was the sound of a piece like Bells of Rimini, for example, which is, to me, still crushingly beautiful. And then when 8 Miles High hit the airwaves, there was no turning back. Still one of the greatest guitar jam hit singles of all time. And McGuinn has many times said that he was trying to, in his own way, show his love of John Coltrane's music in that song. Something about the sort of panmodal freedom that he exhibits in that, and also, of course, the amazing combination of control and spazzing out is still very influential to me. And then, of course, you know, he went on to do so much other great music after that.
Yeah, what was it? Was it India that he was... I forget which piece it was he said he was trying to play like.
Probably, I would say, I think it was Africa, actually.
Right.
I just read recently in Fretboard Journal, I think he mentioned Africa as the piece. I didn't know this until about 2 weeks ago when I saw that interview. But but that makes sense. You know, modal jazz, so-called. It all fits in. Everybody was listening to Indian music at that time, all the hippies, and I got really into Indian music when I was about 10 because our elementary school teacher played some Ravi Shankar in the class, and that really blew my mind. That was very, very important as well. And so I almost took up sitar because Ravi Shankar had a school in Los Angeles at that time. Then I read his autobiography and said, no way, it's too hard.
Years of your
life. Different discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I'm not that, I don't come from that kind of, you know, the Brahmin discipline. It's just was a little mind blowing for a suburban lad.
We're talking with guitarist Nels Klein, who has a new album out, his first solo album called Coward, where he layers a lot of things. Where do you go from there to the world of improvisation? What led you to realizing that there was a whole other world of how to approach the instrument?
Well, I think that my brother and I were always kind of drawn to instrumental music in spite of our love of rock and roll. I think we were very focused on sound, and late 60s, early 70s was a fantastic time for sound in general, not just for songs. So I think that our fixation on certain solo or instrumental moments in music was already pretty well developed, thanks to not only some of the artists that we've mentioned already, but also Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention and Captain Beefheart and his Magic Band, and also Traffic or Buffalo Springfield, Neil Young music. But because of my brother's fixation on Frank Zappa, a friend of ours lent him a John Coltrane record, thinking for some reason, and interestingly, the piece was Africa, which we just discussed. He thought that my brother would like this because he liked quote-unquote all that instrumental Zappa stuff. So we put on Africa, and basically, it was another epiphany. It was, frankly, one of the most important musical moments, and we didn't have any way of knowing that this music had been happening. We were unaware of every aspect of this kind of school of jazz. Basically, I had to learn everything I could about John Coltrane at that point. My brother dove off into Miles and Tony Williams' lifetime, and pretty soon it was the early 70s, and we were listening to the first Weather Report record and Herbie Hancock. And once you discover Miles Davis, you can pretty much trace forwards, backwards, sideways, every other way into the world of improvised music, and that's kind of what we did.
Talking with Nels Klein today on the World Cafe. Let's have you play something. If you could, are there things from the album that you can do? I know it's all layered. I'm wondering if there's something you could play for us.
The only thing that I thought of, because I also don't have a lot of my gadgets here in Chicago, was the closing piece, which is called Cymbidium, and it's a complete minimal piece. Too startled people. It's pretty uneventful, and it's dedicated to the memory of my mother, Thelma Klein.
Thank you. Cymbidium, the piece that's kind of the benediction to Coward, the new album from Nels Klein, as you mentioned, a song that's dedicated to his mother who passed away. He and Alex's mom passed away. There's another death that hangs over this album, and that is of Rod Poole, the guitarist. Actually, the centerpiece of the album is this piece called Rod Poole's Gradual Ascent to Heaven. What happened to Rod?
Well, Rod Poole, who was one of my favorite guitarists or musicians, was murdered in Los Angeles. Well, I guess it's been about 2 years ago now, and maybe more. I lose track of time. Rod was somebody for whom I had great admiration. He's a British gentleman who had moved to Los Angeles a few years ago. And Rod's acoustic guitar music played solo in Just Intonation was some of the most beautiful and overwhelmingly kind of, I guess, powerful yet delicate guitar music I'd ever heard. And so upon hearing it, I tried to figure out how I could get even closer and then try to get inside that sound by playing with Rod. So I devised the idea to put a group together of three acoustic guitars improvising microtonally with Rod and Jim McCauley, another great and rather unsung Los Angeles acoustic guitar player. Needless to say, I was shocked and, I don't know, I was just absolutely devastated when I heard that Rod and his wife Lisa had been walking home from having dinner in their neighborhood in Hollywood, and that a man who had almost run them over in a driveway, I guess Rod yelled at him for almost killing his wife with his car, and the guy got out and stabbed Rod to death. And that man's in jail now, but yeah. So I went into the studio to do a piece that was layered microtonal stringed instruments, and I was not intending to do a piece specifically for Rod. It was just going to maybe have some of the influence of the timbres that were investigated in such a satisfying way for me in the acoustic guitar trio, and it just became a piece for Rod. I don't want to be glib or anything. It just sort of was presenting itself that way. And pretty soon I'd done a 5-movement, 18-minute piece for Rod. And the reason it's called Rod Poole's Gradual Ascent to Heaven is not only to, you know, mention Rod by name so that people will know his name who don't and investigate his music, but also why the gradual ascent. And it's because he didn't want to go. I think he wanted to be alive.
Nels Klein is our guest today, and I dare say a good number of our listeners know you from your day gig and playing in Wilco. And you've done numerous gigs as a sideman, but your gig in Wilco is somewhat different. You're part of a band that you aren't the leader of, and what's that interaction like musically, and why is that attractive to you?
Well, it was certainly unexpected. But it's attractive because I like rock and roll, and I still do. I like the orchestral nature of Wilco much as I did the orchestral nature of playing in the Geraldine Fibbers, a band I was in rather briefly in Los Angeles. It's not so much about finger wiggling, and certainly it's not about a lot of improvising, but I like songs, and I like playing in a group where we're all kind of thinking orchestrally, I think. Yet there is latitude, there's freedom. You know, I get a lot of latitude and a lot of respect in Wilco, and I get to play a lot of great songs by a great songwriter or a group of great songwriters. So, and I still love the pageantry of rock. You know, we get out on stage and we rock out, and there's fancy lighting and lovely venues, and that is pretty different for me at this point. I had been playing in really, really small venues and mostly underground jazz groups, or playing with Mike Watt or the Geraldine Fibbers in small places and enjoying it, but something like this you can't really pass up when the knock comes at the door. You know, I had to give it my all and see how it went, and it's going really well. I'm loving it.
Now, does it take up time that you would, are you able to tour on your own? Are you going to do a solo tour for this album?
Well, it does take up a lot of time. I've pretty much dedicated most of my time to it. That's okay. I've done some touring with my trio, with the Nels Klein Singers, and we'll continue to do some dates with them this year. I didn't really want to do a whole solo tour to support this record because, in a way, I think I was in denial that anyone would even hear this record, to be perfectly honest. It was really made in a very insular and rather, I guess, obsessive, if not self-absorbed, state of mind. And it was made kind of just for me and people who know me. And then I realized that a lot of people were going to hear it. And the response has been a little surprising, frankly. So I didn't really plan on doing some kind of a big push for the record. And I have played some solo things over the years, although I do find it rather terrifying. I think I'm more comfortable just in a group setting or in a duo setting, sort of sharing consciousness in the moment with people or playing songs.
We're talking with Nels Klein today. And back in 1999, you and Greg Bendian made
made an album where I guess we were talking earlier about the music of John Coltrane. You covered Interstellar Space, and if people know the music of John Coltrane, this is not Giant Steps. This is the other kind of end of his career. In the jazz world at the time, if I remember back in about that period of time, I would say the Giant Steps was more at the center of what people were talking about. Was there a political subtext to you all doing that piece?
Oh, there absolutely was. I don't really feel... I would just want to say that I don't feel like the jazz tradition, so-called, is mine to protect or to lord over in any way. But I will say that at the time that Greg Bendian and I decided to play that, it was really because of what was going on in a kind of, I guess, revisionist, neo-traditionalist manner in the jazz world. And I guess the original idea of playing it was a joke that I said to Greg, because when I was playing with Greg Bendian, I was always playing with him in his group Interzone, wherein he plays vibraphone, and my brother Alex would play drums. I just sort of said to Greg one day, you know, hey, if I ever play with you and you're playing drums, because he's like a hummingbird. He has such unbelievable lightning fast technique and energy. I said, well, we should just cover Interstellar Space and something. And that was just ha ha ha, you know. And then he thought about it and started thinking that there would possibly be a reason to try to do that. And it was the reason that we're talking about now, to say that free jazz was important to us, that Coltrane's later period should be taken with seriousness and not dismissed. And so that was why we did it, expecting, frankly, to be vilified. And we didn't really care about that. And it was very, very revealing over time as we played it. It took on a life of its own. And we studied that record, which I realize is primarily improvised. I know that the lore is that Rashid Ali went into the studio expecting a quintet date or a quartet date, and that Coltrane showed up and said, okay, roll tape. And it was just the two of them. And he was very surprised. And of course, it wasn't even released until... maybe 6 years after Coltrane's death. But we studied it really carefully because we wanted to be very respectful and not just toss it out as some sort of broad cavalier gesture, you know? And I find the sound of an overdriven electric guitar to be very tenor saxophone-like.
Well, you know, you bring up a point. You're a guitarist, and I guess I can hand-wavingly say that guitar is the most popular instrument on the planet. And what you play is certainly to the left, more adventurous end of guitarists. Yet, although you may have small audiences, you certainly have an audience for what you do. Imagine if you had indeed been a horn player and played some of the more experimental things that you do. In hindsight, are you really happy you picked the guitar?
It's very funny that you say this, because I say this all the time. Thank God I play guitar. I'm very lucky, because there are, and I really am not trying to be full of it here, but there are so many musicians I know who are so much better than me who will never be known. And it's not just because, oh, there's so much music out there, or because their music is in some way esoteric or not pop, but it's also because of the instruments that they play. And so, yeah, the preeminence of the electric guitar is quite lovely for somebody like me. And I don't think I've, I don't know. I don't want to get into some sort of low self-esteem trip, so I won't go there. But I just am very lucky that people love the electric guitar. And yes, I think about this all the time, because I know so many great musicians and many horn players with whom I play who pretty much live in obscurity and follow the tough road, whether it's free jazz or straight ahead jazz or chamber music, whatever. Yeah, I'm really lucky I play guitar. But, yeah. You know, the other thing is that I love the guitar. It's fun for me. whether in my own music or very specifically in a situation like with Wilco, where I can refer to what one might in an overly vaunted manner call the legacy of the electric guitar. In other words, just make reference to some of those sounds and some of the approaches of some of the greats, in addition to trying to have an individual voice. That's really enjoyable for me because I love the instrument. I love the sound. I've never tired of it. It's still exciting to me, and I can still go into areas that are brand new for me.
Nils Klein, guitarist, is our guest. Thank you so much for playing live for us today, and it's a real treat talking to you.
Well, this is indeed an honor, and thank you for your involvement in creative endeavor and for even recognizing so many things that are out there of value, and I'm just happy to have been able to be here.
Nils Klein, our guest, and we'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.